You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Assalamu alaikum. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Your Excellency, Dr. Al Saada, Minister of Energy and Industry of Qatar. Your Excellency, Sheikh Mohammed Al Thani, Assistant Foreign Minister for International Cooperation Affairs of Qatar. Your Excellency, Dr. Sayyid Mohammed Adali, Secretary General of the Gas Exporting Forum. Your Excellency Adnan Al-Janabi, Chairman of the Oil and Energy Parliamentary Committee of Iraq, distinguished ambassadors and distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, it's my great pleasure to welcome all of you on behalf of the Brookings Institution, specifically the Brookings Doha Center and the Energy Security Initiative led by our partner Charlie Ebinger to the third annual Brookings Energy Forum. This includes special welcome to those who have participated in prior years and have returned. We consider it a testament to the value and importance of this event, and we're honored to have you with us again. To those of you joining us for the first time, we're excited to have you here and are confident that you will find the forum well worth your while. Last night, we had the unique opportunity to hear from a group of rising Qatari leaders and entrepreneurs who offered thought-provoking insights from the local perspective. Qatar, as you know, is the world's largest exporter of liquefied natural gas, has a major impact beyond its borders, and is a perfect vantage point from which to survey the global energy landscape. As most of you know, this region possesses 60% of the world's oil reserves and 40% of the world's gas reserves, respectively. We have an exciting slate of sessions ahead of us as we're looking at how key geopolitical events, such as negotiations over Iran's nuclear program, what's going on in Europe, particularly with regards to the Crimean crisis, as well as the development of the US's shale gas industry, are affecting the demand for fossil fuels in this region and worldwide. We'll also delve into the production, consumption and subsidizing of energy in the Middle East and Asia, as well as the latest trends and shifts in global transportation sectors and unconventional resource extraction. To help us gain a global perspective on these issues, we've again assembled a truly remarkable group of leaders from the Middle East, Asia, the United States and Europe. As you can see, we've managed together to bring an incredible body of knowledge and experience today. We're particularly proud to be joined this year by senior executives from some of the most influential international energy organizations, including the Gas Exporting Countries Forum, the International Energy Forum, and the International Energy Agency, not to mention the World Economic Forum. Those in attendance here are positioned not just to understand world energy markets, but to determine their course over the coming years and decades. Over the next 2 days of discussions, I think we all look forward to sharing insights into where the markets are today, where they're headed, and how they are affecting the geopolitical balance. I would like to extend my thanks again to His Excellency Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman bin Jassim Al Thani, the Minister Assistant for International Cooperation, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, for the vital support that he and the ministry have given to this forum. We will hear his welcoming remarks in a few minutes. We also look forward, of course, to the keynote address of His Excellency Mohammed bin Salah Al Saada, the Minister of Energy and Industry of Qatar, and how he sees the key issues that Qatar and the energy landscape are facing today. I'm also very happy, again, to welcome and look forward to the interventions of His Excellency Sayyid Mohammed Adali, Secretary General of the GECF, and Chairman Al-Janabi of the Oil and Energy Committee. For those of you who've been here before, you'll know that the forum will be in large part conducted according to the working group model, which we see as a key advantage of this event. Through these smaller discussions, participants will have the opportunity to consider and examine the broader issues raised in the forum's plenary sessions. It is through these working groups in particular that we plan to involve the full extent of the insights and expertise we have with us today, which will of course be reflected in our final research products. As you're aware, this is a private, closed-door event. In order to foster a candid, frank discussion, we request that you not attribute any comments made during the forum proceedings to individual participants outside. This opening session is the one exception. As you can see, it is open to the media, and we are very happy for that. Lastly, I'm pleased to announce that over the past year, as promised, we have established an energy research platform here at the Brookings Doha Centre, including our dedicated joint ESI BDC fellow, Dr. Louis Al-Khatib, who you'll see around. This forum is already a very good testimony to his hard work and support of our centre and, of course, with colleagues of ESI. We look forward to producing a world-class research and policy platform that will shape the global energy debate. Again, it is an honour to have you here. Let me also say that we're extremely grateful for the continued support of ExxonMobil, and it's very good to see Ms. Bhatt here as well. We very much appreciate the support that you have given us from the absolute start of this particular endeavour that we're in. I'd like to welcome Dr. Charlie Ebinger, my partner, and the head of the Energy Security Initiative.
Thank you, Salman. Your Excellencies, distinguished members of the Diplomatic Corps, our friends from the private sector, ladies and gentlemen, and most importantly, many old friends who it's nice to have an opportunity to see once again, in some cases, after many years. I will be quick. I just wanted to note the excellent work that Salman and the staff of the BDC have done. When we think back to the first session we had 3 years ago, we've come a very long way, and that is in large part, of course, because of the active and we're very thankful for the support of many people in the Qatari government. I think it's important to reflect how far the world has come since we're almost at the 40th year since the oil embargo of 1973-74. As one who had the opportunity to work in this region of the world at that time, it's really remarkable when one visits many of the Gulf states, but particularly Qatar, to see how far this part of the world has been transformed. Let me just also say that I think it's been an extremely rewarding relationship between not only the BDC, but Brookings in Washington, and we cannot think more forcefully about a better partner than we've had with the government. Without further ado, let me now welcome Sheikh Mohammed Al Thani to the stage for his opening remarks. Thank you.
May the peace and blessings of God be upon you. In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful, ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, may the peace of God be upon you all. It is a pleasure to meet today through the Brookings Doha Energy Forum 2014 for consultations regarding the geopolitical changes and also the political economy changes and its impact on the markets of oil and gas in the Middle East and Asia. First of all, I would like to thank Brookings Doha for their distinctive efforts in order to put communication between the decision makers, experts, and also the different elites in order to reach a number of recommendations and also to develop society through their different scientific research and also including this very important event. We are very happy with this initiatives of energy by Brookings Center, and which concentrates mainly on studying the relationship between the Middle East and also the emerging powers regarding energy, and energy is one of the most important topics that is being discussed economically and politically, because it is the impetus of development and advancement. At this particular time, we cannot ignore the geopolitical and economic variable, and we cannot also ignore the strategic dimension of energy on world politics. This would have repercussions on the different variables and also the sources of traditional energy in the region. And we cannot also ignore the repercussions on the demand and also on the users of the different sources of energy. And we have to tell you that the world sees that the impact would be great, and also that the level of demand of oil will raise to 118 million barrels per day in 2040. And in this respect, the state of Qatar is representing a very important scene that should be studied, and also the state of Qatar has a reserve of 25.1 trillion of cubic meters of natural gas, which represent 13% of the world reserves of gas. In addition to that, the state of Qatar is the biggest exporter of natural liquefied gas, and also the state of Qatar has proven its capability to meet the needs and requirements of the world of Asia of energy. And at the end, I would like to reiterate my thanks to you all, and I wish you all the best in your deliberations in this very important forum. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sheikh Mohammed. I'd now like to welcome His Excellency Dr. Mohammed bin Salah Al Sada, Minister of Energy and Industry, State of Qatar. Of course, as he gets up, in addition to him being the Minister of Energy and Industry, His Excellency is the Managing Director and Chairman of the Board of Directors of Qatar Petroleum, where he has served for over 28 years. Previously, he was Minister of State for Energy and Industry Affairs and Managing Director of RasGas. His Excellency is chairman of the board at RasGas and a number of other key energy industry entities. He holds a PhD from the University of the Manchester Institute of Science and Technology in the UK. It's such wonderful to have you here again. Thank you for all your support, Minister.
Your Excellencies, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, a very good morning to you all. I'm honored to be back again at the Brookings Doha Energy Forum in its third year, and to be able to address this distinguished gathering. I'd like to seize this opportunity to express my sincere appreciation to the Brookings Doha Center for their kind invitation and for organizing this important event. The Center's efforts are quite notable in engaging leading stakeholders from across the world, spectrum of domains, for a discussion of key public policy issues, most importantly, energy. When we met last year, our discussions focused on the implications of the changing global gas market for the Middle East and Asia. That was an important theme, particularly with regard to the shifts of changes in the global natural gas markets brought about as a result of the unconventional gas revolution. Since then, a number of new challenges have emerged in the form of geopolitical developments impacting energy markets. It is therefore quite befitting to focus This year's discussions on how changes in the geopolitical, political, economy and markets alter the energy landscape. And let us not forget that this landscape is not static, but rather a very dynamic and often a turbulent one, in which many producers and consumers have shifted places, and during which a double-digit price per barrel of oil is history. I'd like to begin from a major milestone in this changing landscape, namely America's growing production of shale gas and oil. The U.S. Energy Information Administration says this growth will reshape the U.S. energy economy when crude oil production reaches 9.6 million barrels per day by the end of 2016, which is the historic high achieved back in year 1970. The EIA expects this tight oil production to level off and then slowly decline after 2020. On the other hand, it forecasts that gas production will grow steadily with a 56% increase between 2012 and 2040, when production reaches 37.6 trillion cubic feet. Of course, this is all assuming that existing policies, laws, and regulations remain more or less unchanged throughout the period. This energy boom seems to have moved northwards to Canada, which exports most of its oil to the United States, representing a quarter of American crude oil import. However, Canada's LNG export have seen quite a remarkable transition with the plans aimed at the Pacific Rim markets. Currently, there are a number of gas export projects in the western part of Canada at various stages of permission and development. Their progress will depend on building the required infrastructure, lining up commercial arrangements, and meeting a number of viability challenges, including project complexity and rising development cost. Let us move further east to China, which sits on one of the world's largest shale reserves. In pursuit of a shale gas boom, China is actively engaged in building a capacity target of 230 billion cubic feet per year as early as next year. However, this energy-hungry consumer will need to meet a number of important regulatory and technological challenges. But most importantly, it will have to find solutions to providing a huge amount of water resources needed for hydraulic fracking. Also, in this global production landscape is Australia, which has an estimated 819 trillion cubic feet of gas reserves, and which is moving forward with efforts to raise its existing LNG capacity within the next 2 to 4 years. In addition to 3 operating LNG developments, Australia has 7 new projects in various planning and implementation stages, costing more than $200 billion. These, ladies and gentlemen, were some of the perspectives of the main production-related elements that I thought needed to be highlighted because of the impact they could have on changing the characteristics of the energy landscape. However, looking at the world today, we see a different set of elements that are shuffling regional cards and are increasing the size of the energy geopolitical footprints. Geopolitical pressures over the situation in Ukraine have caused many energy concerns, but it is not yet clear when and how hard this situation could affect energy markets. This is mainly due to the many variables of the possible impasse over Crimea. In the meantime, Russia's European energy partners remain concerned, particularly that almost 20% of natural gas consumed in Europe flows through Ukraine. But despite the fact that natural gas represented only 22% of Europe's total energy consumption in 2013, the question of energy security in the European Union remains high on the agenda of member states. Ironically, Europe's strong energy and climate change policies seems to have taken a back seat for the time being as coal import rocketed by 23% in 2012. This striking upswing came as many European utilities shut down their modern gas-fired plants and began burning cheaper coal instead. While attention is focused on the development in Ukraine, the eyes of the world remain on Iran in the hope of a new rapprochement with the West. Tensions and threats of an armed conflict raised concern over the Strait of Hormuz, through which more than 17 million barrels of crude oil shipped every day. I believe that no single party has an interest in closing this strategic waterway, which was never closed through several decades of geopolitical turmoil and the three Gulf Wars. Any conflict that will hinder the free flow of energy supplies is an issue that concerns the entire world, which fully understands the ramifications of any actions affecting trade routes. In fact, such a unified international stand with regard to shipping lanes was best demonstrated in dealing with Somali pirates in the Arab Sea. It is a testament to international efforts and cooperation to see that hijacking have dropped down to virtually no successful attempts in 2013. And finally, in this geopolitical snapshot, ladies and gentlemen, domestic politics continued to add pressures on Venezuela, one of the world's main oil producers. This has raised concern over the country's plans to start natural gas production from the Gulf of Venezuela, where more than 15 trillion cubic feet of gas have been discovered. As we watch these geopolitical developments, one cannot overlook the fact that worldwide energy consumption is expected to increase by almost 50% between now and 2035. Almost 90% of such growth is expected to come from non-OECD countries led by emerging economies such as China and India. Similarly, global LNG demand, which is growing at an average of about 5% per annum, is expected to almost double from around 240 million tons per annum in 2013 to almost 460 million tons by 2025. This actively dynamic map of threats and opportunities, ladies and gentlemen, highlights some of the main geopolitical challenges influencing the global energy map. It certainly is a constant reminder of the huge responsibilities which nations must shoulder in order to ensure development and well-being. Albert Einstein once said, "We cannot solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them." This is absolutely true in dealing with today's geopolitical changes. I believe there is a dire need for a new, effective thinking to help reduce tensions, minimize geopolitical risks, mitigate threats to international trade routes, and maintain the stability of energy markets. It is important in this respect that international dialogue and cooperation are extended to cover market developments, ensuring the security of both supply as well as demand. In the state of Qatar, we have always been adopting and promoting a policy of peaceful resolution of differences and conflicts in this region and across the globe. Qatar has also proved to be a reliable source of energy with a high ability to meet changing and dynamic market situations. Our natural gas production in 2013 exceeded 7 trillion cubic feet. This includes 77 million tons of LNG exported to more than 25 countries around the world, pipeline gas export to the UAE and Oman, and domestic consumptions. As the world's largest LNG supplier, representing a quarter of global LNG supplies, Qatar's prominent position in the global energy market is set to remain for years to come. Today, the state of Qatar is well placed to meet the increasing demand for natural gas. And under the wise leadership and guidance of His Highness Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, the Emir of the State of Qatar, we are also committed to continue meeting our obligations as a reliable energy producer and a partner in development and as an active player in ensuring market stability. In conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, geopolitical threats will always be there, and so will our collective resolve and determination to maintain their impact. Thank you for your attention. All the best to you all.
Thank you very much, Dr. Al-Sada. It's now my great pleasure to invite to the podium His Excellency Sayyid Mohammed Hussein Adeli, Secretary General of the Gas Exporting Countries Forum. Just a little bit of background as you come up, of course, is that you are an economist, diplomat, academic with extensive experience in several fields. Dr. Adeli has served as the Iranian government as advisor to the Minister of Oil on International Affairs, Deputy Foreign Minister for Economic and Energy Affairs, and as the Governor of the Central Bank, advisor to the President and ambassador to Japan, Canada, and the United Kingdom. Subsequently, Dr. Adeli established Iran's first private think tank in 2005, the Ravand Institute for Economic and International Studies. Dr. Adli has doctorates from California University and Jamia University in New Delhi. It's a great pleasure to have you here on this forum for the first time, and I know we've been discussing how Brookings can collaborate with you at the GECF in the future, and we look forward to that. Thank you.
Your Excellency Minister Assada, Your Excellency Sheikh Mohammed Al Thani, Excellencies, distinguished participants, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. It's indeed a great pleasure for me to participate in the Brookings Doha Energy Forum and to have the opportunity to address this important gathering. I would like to congratulate Mr. Salman Sheikh, the distinguished director of Brookings Doha, for organizing such a prominent meeting of policymakers, opinion leaders, and businesses on energy subjects that continue to be on top in the global agenda. In this context, and as the new Secretary General of the Gas Exporting Countries Forum, I would like to share with you some of our views on the fast-evolving global gas market and its major challenges. I'm sure many present at this meeting are aware of the GECF goals and missions. The Gas Exporting Countries Forum is an international governmental organization of the world's leading gas producing and exporting countries. The forum held its first ministerial meeting in Iran in May 2001, but it was after some time that in December 2008, the forum agreed to take a step further to establish the headquarters of the organization in Doha, state of Qatar. In terms of strength, GECF countries are sitting on 67% of the world's natural gas reserves, and they're responsible for 65% of LNG trade and 40% of pipeline trade of natural gas. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, the main energy challenge of today is how to balance and meet the increasing global demand for a secure energy in the medium and long term, while serving the global climate change efforts in tandem. Amid all uncertainties, there is one predominant element. The world will need more secure, ever-increasing amounts of environmentally friendly energy used in a more efficient way, available to a large share of the world's population. This is where we see enhanced role of natural gas and our forum. Among fossil fuels, natural gas is expected to play a more prominent role in the years to come, not only because it is the cleanest fossil fuel, but also because of its abundance and availability. Speaking of natural gas, global demand for this clean fuel is projected to double in the first half of this century or even earlier, and requires robust policies to encourage gas production. In terms of energy perspectives, we project the primary energy demand will continue to increase while oil and coal market shares are expected to decline. The biomass, nuclear, hydro, and renewables gain share, but natural gas will benefit the most. Indeed, GECF expects that the share of natural gas in the world consumption will accelerate in the next two decades. In our outlook, natural gas demand is set to increase with a growth rate of 2.5% that represents an acceleration of the growth rate witnessed over the previous 22 years. Nevertheless, the complexity of energy markets, the uncertainty of energy policies towards the energy mix preference of consuming countries, as well as the effective efforts that governments have to implement toward achieving of the greenhouse gas emission targets, translate the challenges for natural gas and leads the way to increase its share and compete with other fuels. This is what we in GECF are trying to achieve to make natural gas as an environmentally friendly and cost-effective energy of choice by increasing the market share of gas in the global energy mix and contributing to the stability and sustainability of the world gas market. Indeed, we believe that natural gas will continue to take market share away from coal and oil in the power generation sector, and gas usage as the feedstock is expected to increase sharply over the outlook period, in part because of the high cost of naphtha in the petrochemical sector that provides a competitive advantage of natural gas over liquid-based feedstock. Other parts of the economy, such as residential, commercial, and industry, will also receive their fair contribution of gas. In transportation sector, despite the slow penetration of gas in the sector, natural gas is gaining relatively reasonable market share. Furthermore, we may expect later on more LNG as a supplement of bunkering fuel in LNG vessels in order to cut down shipping costs. At the regional level, today the center of gravity of demand, of gas demand, lies in the north, with North America, OECD Europe and CIS regions accounting for 59% of total global demand. However, there will be a large shift towards the east, with non-OECD Asia, led by India and China, and the Middle East demand increasing significantly, while not ignoring the importance of Latin American demand for natural gas. In addition to these concerns, gas industry is being confronted by the challenges raised by the global environment in which this industry is evolving. The main restraint for the increase of gas consumption in some developed markets, for instance in Europe, are political decisions on energy and economic recovery, which has forced gas out of power generation sector in EU countries. For example, pending program of combined cycle gas turbine power plants. In the supply front, and amongst many uncertainties, all the assessments and studies concludes that there are huge supply of natural gas, and many of these supplies could be developed and produced as the battle with green, could be developed and produced commercially. However, despite the availability of the reserves, their delivery still remains dependent over the other factors, such as the capital investments required for developments. Exploitation of gas resources is capital intensive, thus setting a reasonable price mechanism to secure financing the development of shale gas is mandatory. It is notable that natural gas market is dynamic in terms of shift in the role of export and import, as some exporting countries have started to import natural gas and some net importing countries have the potential to be chief exporting countries, as referred to by His Excellency Minister Assada. In the light of and in line with the theme of today's debate, it is worth to talk about the role of unconventional gas in meeting future global gas demand. We in GECF consider that much more activity is needed before we know exactly how much unconventional gas exists, and more importantly, how much can be produced economically and made available to the market. But to secure the full potential of natural gas in the decades ahead, our industry must continue to invest, innovate, and create new partnerships to meet rising energy demand, with focus on technology development. Innovation in technology is the solution to getting more out of the world's finite resources of fossil fuels. New technologies such as floating LNG vessels, gas-to-liquid technology, and LNG or CNG as transport fuels are being used to offset the increasing cost pressures, reducing the environmental impact of fossil fuels and proposing new solutions to monetize natural gas. However, we should be aware that sustainable development of natural gas resources will require a stable institutional and regulatory framework and enhanced producers' and consumers' dialogue. as well as maintaining long-term contracts with oil-indexed prices in order to foster this capital-intensive industry in a sustainable manner. The other important subject in this field is energy policies, which have direct impact on gas supply and demand and the uncertainties around the consumers' countries regarding promoting natural gas usage. On the other hand, it is the pace at which world economy recovery occurs that will determine how quickly demand grows over the next decade. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, to conclude, we may say that demand for energy is rapidly increasing and the role for gas is very promising. It holds tremendous potential to transform the global economy. It is quickly becoming a key enabler for economic growth and environmental progress globally. However, development taking place in this market, such as LNG spot trading and its flexibility, price differentials, energy policy options, new potential exporters, as well as domestic price structures in some producing countries are considered to be challenges that require adequate attention. With this in mind, the GECF expects to fulfill a highly relevant and important mission to accommodate the needs for energy in the future. This mission consists of promotion of the use of gas as a clean fuel and contribution to sustainable development and a cleaner environment. Thank you for your attention, and I wish you all constructive and successful debate.
Thank you very much, Secretary General Adderley. Of course, as we talk about the changing energy landscape, we can't ignore Iraq. And therefore, it's my great pleasure to invite to the podium Dr. Adnan Al-Janabi, Chairman of the Oil and Energy Committee of the Iraqi Parliament. In addition to his role in Iraq's Parliament, Dr. Al-Janabi is President of the Iraq Center for Research and Studies. He served as Minister of State in 2004 and 2005 and was an influential member of Iraq's National Assembly, as many of you know, I am sure. He has held important positions in Iraq's Ministry of Oil and Central Bank, as well as OPEC. Mr. Al-Janabi has been the CEO of several private sector companies and has authored significant publications on the theory and practice of oil pricing and production and the theory of exhaustible resources. It's my great pleasure to invite you, Dr. Al-Janabi.
Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, assalamu alaikum. We are living in the era of, relatively speaking, high oil prices. I have lived in a previous era of high oil prices after 79-80 price hikes. And during that period, we saw the phasing out of oil from the power sector. In this recent high oil price era, we are seeing many developments which inevitably will influence future supply and demand on at least liquid hydrocarbons, but probably most fossil fuels also. One of the results of this high oil price era is the gas and oil revolution in the United States, which is having a great impact not only on the domestic market of the United States, not only on the international trends in oil and gas movements, but also probably a more lasting effect on American foreign policy and interest in the countries of the Middle East and North Africa, and probably Caspian also. Some people consider the shift of the United States from engagement and military intervention in Iraq and Afghanistan to a more soft policy in their approach to foreign affairs of the United States as being a temporary result of the negative effect the intervention in Iraq and Afghanistan had on the United States. But the way I see it, this is a more lasting result of a degree of American independence from depending on oil supplies from the MENA region and the Caspian. In my view, this trend will seriously and drastically shift international geopolitical relations, especially with regard to this part of the world. Again, the recent developments in our area, especially in Iraq, since the military intervention of 2003 and subsequent events leading to American military withdrawal from Iraq. Unfortunately, the American intervention resulted in the dismantling of the state institutions of Iraq. Now the Americans have left, but we are left with sectarian divisions inside our body politic. Iraq has not had the opportunity to reestablish state institutions. Unfortunately, our emerging democracy is not moving steadily towards an institutional state of law, but really to unstable development, whether in the last elections when we had several months to negotiate establishing the government. And I remind myself and you that Iraq and Iraq's constitution needed two props. The federal structure needs a division of power and a division of wealth. This means, or should have meant, that we should have restructured our oil industry with a federal hydrocarbon law, which was negotiated towards the end of 2006, and a draft agreed hydrocarbon law was presented to Parliament in February of 2007. Until today, unfortunately, I have to say, from my position as being responsible for promoting that law, that we have lost the consensus which was established in 2006-2007, and we have greater divisions on how to approach that law. The other necessary sector or arm of our federal structure is the division of wealth. In accordance with Article 106 of the Iraqi Constitution, we should have an authority to receive all the wealth coming from the oil and other sectors and to spread it according to the population percentage and need of the various authorities in the country. Not only the central government in Baghdad, but the governorates and the regions. We have one region now, but the Constitution allows for several regions, and this authority to share the wealth of Iraq should have been established again, if not in 2006, 2007, but until now, 2014, we are having an election within 1 month, and I'm not sure the elections will result in a consensus government, especially that Iraq is now suffering from another influence in the area, which is the dismantlement and the civil war in Syria. We are having serious intrusions in Iraq by extremist groups, which are stabilizing the western part of the country, especially in Anbar. And the elections are going to be held in very tense atmosphere with regard to military operations in Anbar and sectarian divisions in the country and a rift between the central government and the region of Kurdistan. And this is also impacting what is happening in the oil sector, whether in the south of Iraq or in Kurdistan. Due to this instability, we are already behind the schedule which was announced in 2010, 2011, that Iraq is going to move swiftly into producing something like 12 million barrels daily, or if we add up the total, it's about 15 million barrels daily by 2017. I don't see any of that happening. Officially, the target was reduced to 9 million barrels daily, working with the international majors during the last 2 years. These targets have been lowered down to 9 million barrels daily, but again, I don't see that happening. The International Energy Agency and some experts think that Iraq will move to 6 million barrels daily by the end of the decade. In my view, that is going to be a very bumpy road. We are seriously behind schedule, and Kurdistan is having trouble negotiating with the central government and with Turkey to pass its oil to the international markets. If we are allowed to dream, we may dream of a solution to the differences in the sectarian situation in Iraq and the major conflict overspilling from Syria, but I think dreaming is not good for political forecasting. In my view, Iraq will suffer for some time under these unstable conditions, and with that, Iraq's oil production in the international market will also suffer. And with the international community, especially the United States, are disengaging from Iraq, and as we saw from Syria, we may expect solutions to be very difficult for the major problems of instability in Iraq. The glimpse of hope which we are seeing in the detente between the United States and Iran may or may not mature. In my view, they will continue on a middle stream course, which means that not all the sanctions will be lifted very soon from Iran, and not a lot of progress in the coming year or two, helping Iran to increase its production significantly. Libya is faltering. Venezuela is faltering. Nigeria has never been stable. So we are living in an era of instability in the international markets, especially oil markets. And with the high oil prices, we are seeing demand declining for liquid hydrocarbons in the OECD area. And with high oil prices, we are seeing serious intrusions into the major market for liquid hydrocarbons, which is transportation. And if these high prices continue, if the gas hydrofracking revolution of the United States continue, I think we are going to see intrusion into the transportation sector, not only from renewables, but also potentially from gas. Having said this, I think the world needs greater cooperation between producers and consumers, not only in the international energy markets, but specifically in the oil sector. We are not in the conflict era of the 80s and 90s. We are in the cooperation era of the millennium. And unstable energy prices will seriously affect the fragile recovery and economic growth around the globe. We need people like the International Energy Forum and other players, not only in OPEC, but other oil producers and the consumers, not only the international, the OECD countries, the international major consumers, but the new consumers in Southeast Asia, especially China and India, to come to a serious discussion of cooperation on stabilizing supply and demand and meeting potential disruptions in the international market. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Chairman Al-Janabi, for your informed and very candid remarks. I'd like to thank all of the speakers. I think you've set us up beautifully for our days ahead. A couple of things I will mention is that, of course, a country that was mentioned over and again was the United States. And here I would say to you that we are going to get a U.S. perspective a little later on. Amos Hochstein, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Energy and Industry, the U.S. Department of State, will be here tomorrow. And later tonight, we have the great honor of hosting Governor Bill Richardson, who will be speaking at tonight's dinner. He was actually rushing to get here for this morning's session, but bad weather in Boston, I'm afraid, has slowed him down. So he'll be coming later this afternoon. I'd also like to acknowledge Ambassador Susan Ziadé, who's here. Thank you for all the support that you have given us as well. And also, let me please acknowledge the Right Honourable Lord David Howell of Guildford, who will be speaking this lunchtime from a European perspective. And given the comments that His Excellency the Minister made on Europe and Ukraine, I think it will be very interesting to hear you as well. Before we break, I'd also like to acknowledge one other group that has been instrumental in helping to put together this forum, and those are the members of the Brookings Doha Energy Forum International Advisory Committee. They have very senior people who have engaged in a series of conference calls and given their input and advice. And here we have, of course, Mr. Ivan Sandrea of Venezuela, who's present, Herman Franzen, Dutch, but of Europe, I would say, as well, Vikram Mehta of Brookings, the chairman of Brookings India, who unfortunately couldn't be with us, Victor Gao of China, Bassem Fatou of Europe and the UK, and David Goldwyn of the US. It's a very powerful group who's been giving us very important advice and ably, I would say, helped and led by Dr. Nasser Jada, who, of course, is the representative of the minister and Qatar Petroleum International on that advisory committee, who, of course, is here as well. What I would suggest is we take a short break for a few minutes, allow you to stretch your legs, and then we'll get straight into the next panel in about 20 minutes or so. Let me thank again the minister and all our guests for their speaking role. Thank you.